Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Isotope Native Instruments and Plugin Alliance are launching a whole bunch of super hot deals for the Summer of Sound sale. From now until the 6th of July 2023, Isotope are offering all their software for 50% or more off, including the comprehensive mixing and mastering bundle Music Production Suite 5, as well as flagship tools like Ozone, RX, Neutron, and more. All things I use to edit this podcast. Visit isotope.com and check out the frankly colossal range of things that you can get at extraordinary prices, and take your mixing and editing to a whole new level. Listen up, dear listeners in the UK. There's a brand new guitar show this year, the Brighton Guitar Show. It's a one-day show happening on the 15th of July at the Brighton Racecourse, and it's going to be great. We'll be there along with loads of your favourite boutique and major brands like Two Notes Audio Engineering, Chapman Guitars, Fidelity Guitars, Thought B Effects, Pedal Patch, Bright Onion Pedals, Ranger Effects, NRG Effects, Great Eastern Effects, Iverson Guitars, Kurt Mangan Strings, Mabry, Leighton, Lemon Audio, Xander Circuitry, and loads more. What more excuse do you need to come to sunny Brighton, the birthplace of guitar nerds, than a guitar show full of guitars, pedals, effects, and accessories? Come say hi, hang out, have a beer, and check out all the cool gear with Matt, JD, and I. You might even see a few of the OG guitar nerds hosts knocking about. For tickets, visit brightonguitarshow.co.uk or check them out on social media with Brighton Guitar Show. See you there.
JD, I used to run a dating service for chickens. But I was struggling to make hens meet.
Good.
It was good. I had several to choose from this week. Justice is a dish best served cold. If it was served warm, it would be called just water. I like that. That's a clever play on spelling, as well as a good dad joke. It's almost too elevated to be a dad joke. I think that's only just there.
Oh, well, it's interesting. It's like, if it were in one of those dad joke books, I think reading it, you'd be like, oh yeah, I get it. You know, like, it makes more sense reading. Like,
it's a written dad joke.
The effort is when you're telling it and you're like, oh, I get it, because I know spelling.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah, that's it. That's the difference. That's a written format dad joke. I understand now. Hello, dear listener. Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds Podcast. I'm your host, Joe Branton, joined this week by JD Short.
Hello.
Hello, JD. How's it going? Welcome back to the podcast.
Oh, thanks. Yeah. No, everything's going well. Still sort of, I feel like I'm finally recovered from Glastonbury times.
Yeah, Matt and I spoke about some of the guitars of Glastonbury, but you actually got to go. You were working the, Lost Property, that was it.
Yeah, Lost Property. All part of the wellness team, but yeah. Yeah, did some Lost Property stuff. It was great. Saw some amazing things, got to be, it was the first time I've been to Glastonbury, and the weather was lovely the whole time, and like, actually having shifts at Lost Property, it was only like a few shifts, but like having them sort of gave you sort of markers throughout the week.
Right.
I went, basically was there Wednesday morning and left like Monday morning. So it was, you know, quite some time. So, but like having, and I had a shift on Wednesday and Monday. So like having those sort of bookends was a nice way to sort of be able to quasi tell time, at least while you're there, because time is irrelevant when it's there. So
I see.
It's good times.
And you actually got to see some of the gear firsthand. I saw you post about Slash's Travis Bean. Was that the double necked Travis Bean?
No, it was just like a regular the main model. I don't know exactly which model it was because I was nowhere near the stage, but but on screen, it was definitely. Yeah, it was just great that I saw that I wasn't expecting Slash to come out with like a Travis Bean, because like, you know, I've always seen him with like the BC Riches and, you know, Les Pauls famously, and then, you know, first second song was with a Travis Bean, and I was like, well, here we go, I'm into this. And like they sounded great. Duff, the bass player for Guns N' Roses, Duff, his tone was incredible, and also like the bass, well, all the tones for Queens of the Stone Age were great, but like that was the other sort of bass tone that really stood out to me. But Duff, you know, famously just uses the MXR preamp through.
Oh, really? What is that?
The M80, 180? I think. Yeah,
M80. That's it. Yeah.
And it just sounded massive, you know, and it was such a good, perfect tone, and I really wasn't prepared for how good Guns N' Roses would sound. Sort of like they was just really great. Like all the guitar and bass tones especially were fantastic. That's not me shirking the actual question, but it's just like the things that really, really stood out. I was like, oh, it's just like real proper rock and roll tones, you know, and made me appreciate a lot of their guitar playing and like the intertwined nature of like Slash and whomever. Well, I know their name, but you know, like it's Izzy or, you know, like the other rhythm guitar player over the years.
Yeah.
And it was just like a really, really great. Yeah. It's really great to see him. And then like Slash's soloing is one where it's like I forgot how recognizable his soloing is, because there'd be bits like songs I didn't really know where I'm like, yeah, this is definitely Slash playing, you know. And just
that's sort of sloppy blues solos, but just I don't know, the way that he does it is so, it's not only recognizable, it's also had such a massive impact. And I think I forgot until I saw him doing you know what he does again, being like, oh yeah, you can. It's so clear how much of music he has influenced with that, with his playing style, with his soloing style.
Yeah, it's amazing, because it's, I don't know, it was weird like watching them. And you know, Appetite for Destruction was the first cassette I ever bought with my own money, and I paid over the odds because we were on holiday, and it was one of those like, oh, I definitely want it. And I this used to be like embarrassing, but I've told so many people this story now, but it's like, I remember like, I loved that album so much that in the liner notes, I had written in like pink marker pen, you know, cause you know, let's face it, it was like the '80s. And so I wrote like JD lead vocals with Axel or whatever. Like, and then, so I like wrote my name in the liner notes, and I just like, I love that album so much. And it's, and I just, it's weird. So like watching them was really important to me.
Right.
And in a way that I didn't think it would be, but it was this weird, like, oh, I'm getting to see Guns N' Roses because I've never seen them before.
Yeah.
And it was just the thing of feeling like, they're definitely from a different era. You know, like a lot of their songs, it feels like, okay, especially this stuff off Appetite or anything pre-Use Your Illusion, like that sort of final kind of heyday of like original-ish Guns N' Roses, drummers aside. But it was just that thing of just feeling, oh, this is definitely of a different time, where a lot of stuff at Glastonbury didn't feel like that, you know. So like even seeing Elton or seeing whoever, didn't feel like things didn't feel like, okay, this is music's moved on since this happened, but like, and it, you know, a lot of times it really hasn't, but it was just this weird nostalgic sense that I didn't get with like other bands. You know, it might have been because like a lot of the other bands I saw, you know, if that were big that have been around for a while, like I don't know loads about them. Like I don't know loads about Arctic Monkeys because they weren't big in the States,
right,
and you know, and I didn't live in Sheffield, you know, so, and so it's just, you know, I'd heard of them because I listened to Radio One and stuff, you know, for like the last 20 years, but it's, you know, like I don't have the same connection with them. So like seeing them, it's like, oh, okay, cool. You know, whatever.
Yeah. But, yeah. Fine. Yeah. Well, I mean, it definitely was like Matt and me spoke about it last week on the podcast. It was Glastonbury was such a great festival for gear, for seeing cool and interesting guitars. And I guess, you know, Guns N' Roses were really at the heart of that, along with Arctic Monkeys, I think.
Yeah. I mean, Slash changed guitars like nearly every song, you know, kind of thing. And it was great. And just, yeah, like Travis Bean's, Les Paul's, BC Rich's, other random stuff, you know, it's just like, oh, it's stuff you don't see that often, you
yeah.
know, like,
yeah, absolutely.
So it's cool.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, shortly after Glastonbury, actually this weekend just gone, I went to Love Supreme Festival just outside of Glynde down here, dear listener, on the south coast of England. And it's a wonderful jazz festival. It's got, you know, like four or five stages. And what it does is it puts on great, brilliant, fresh, new, and interesting old jazz acts on a couple of the tent stages. And then it makes its money by putting on old sort of your mum's compilation CD soul acts on the main stage. And that's how they make their money. Loads of people turn up and just hang out on the main stage watching. Yeah, I couldn't even name the people, yeah. But they're all apparently famous. And you know, I got to knock around some of the jazz stages, watching absolutely fantastic music with my partner Emma, and we were watching one of the jazz bands on early in the day, and you know, whatever. People clap and Emma turns to me and she's like, I don't know when to clap. And it's like, oh yes, of course, you clap after solos, not at the end of songs. That's when you clap at a jazz gig. just clap there. But Thundercat was actually headlining one of the stages, and the funny thing was that I think a lot of youngsters turned up for Thundercat because, of course, amazing bass player, dear listener, you'll be aware of his Ibanez signature model hollow body six string fretted Ibanez bass with a couple of active soap bars and one of those ramps fitted in the middle. Lovely fella, amazing music, basically auto wah and ring mod the entire time. Very cool. But he's famous for his poppy songs, but he is a jazz musician, so his sets are jazz interpretations between a piano player, him on bass, and a drummer of those songs. He doesn't have all the stuff that made those tracks. It's jazz versions of the song, so it's mostly instrumental bass solos, and every now and again he might sing a little verse from maybe a song that you might recognize. And it was almost the reverse at the Thundercat gig, because people were cheering every time they recognized a bit, because I think so many people had turned up for the hits and actually just got essentially a two-hour bass solo. But it was very good. I got to see lots of, unfortunately, not like, dear listener, I don't have a load of great guitar stories from Love Supreme, because it was mostly like Latin music, a bit of like Nigerian inspired jazz. Mulatu Asatke, the guy who invented Ethiopian jazz, was there. So it was all mostly percussion and vibraphones. That's what I was watching. So I don't have any cool guitar things to say, but nonetheless, a great festival, dear listener, if you want something a little bit different.
Yeah, I think the thing for me, like this thing about like festivals, are such a great place to be inspired by just music. And you know, we talked about this pre-Glastonbury, is like one of my favorite things about festivals is going to see a bit of a band that I wouldn't go across town to see, but like, I would definitely go see at a fest, you know. It's like, oh, well, they're here, I'll just go check them out. And just like being surprised and just seeing so many cool pieces of gear, so many people doing like really cool things. Like one of the things to talk about, like Young Fathers played Glastonbury, and it's really worth watching their, I'd watch their set back on iPlayer if possible, because it's like they have so many really interesting things. Like they have like a real like spring reverb, like giant spring reverb kit that they use to like strike the spring and like make noises. But then they have load like a rack of synths, and they're basically using like a Korg Vulture, like delay, the Vultures, you know, and stuff like that.
They had the Vultures, and also the smaller, more basic ones, the Monotrons or Microtrons or whatever they're called. They're battery powered, and they've got them all like rack mounted in a row. Yeah.
And those Monotrons are great. Like I remember I got mine for, it was like, they were like $50 in the day. Yeah. And I was like, used to just, there's not much you can do with it. I got it just when I was traveling a bunch, just to have something like, okay, now I can at least make sounds.
Yeah.
But it's like running them through stuff, they sound great, but it's, but like they're auxiliary musicians, like, you know, slide guitar, just regular other guitar. But then they also have the old like telephone receiver, like rewired to be, you know, just to be used as a microphone and stuff like that. And it's like, it's just seeing like all that stuff was like, oh yeah, we used to do that. Like I had bands that we did that, you know, the classic old, had a wired a microphone into a gas mask because, you know, it was the cool 90s and stuff, and that's what you did, and all of that. And it's like, it's just so much like gear things you don't normally see.
Yeah. They were quite old school, weren't they? Yeah. So many things that have ended up being a laptop on the side of the stage.
Yeah.
This sort of thing is definitely affecting rock music now, but certainly it's affected electronic music much quicker.
Yeah.
Far fewer things are being done with rack gear anymore. And I agree, I love Young Fathers, and it's lovely to watch them create all of their sounds completely. They have so many musicians on stage. I mean, that, you know, Young Fathers essentially have three vocalists. Half the time, one of the vocalists is just repeating a loop that is probably could just be a sampled loop of one line, but they do it live.
it's so good. Like I was really, because I was right up front, so I could just see all the gear stuff, and I was like, oh, this is great. And yeah, it was just really cool to see them actually working stuff. And those Monotrons, huge sounding, like and like on like the West Holt stage, I was just like, this is great. And that's $50, that thing, you know? Like,
yeah. Good. Yeah. He had it running into, I think, a Fender Twin just on its side. But yeah.
Oh yeah. That was it. Yeah. Loads of amps that they had. Yeah. It was great. Yeah,
they were a super cool band. Now, this week actually just gone also, I went to Fender's new secret artist center.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable, too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
It is a secret. I mean,
It was a secret.
No, you're not allowed to say where it is. Now, I do know that like a publication has at some point broken that and told people where it is. But it's a secret location in London. It's an invite-only artist center. So I went down there to to check out all of the stuff. That was, it was lovely to get invited. And so I went down to check out all their new stuff. Lovely to see Jay Cross and Dan Grace there, because of course they also work. They have their offices, their new Fender offices out of there in London. And I also met up with long time podcast listener and Patreon supporter Sean Hughes, who was over with his family from the States on their holiday. They were doing all the things you expect, all the the London dungeon tours and all of those all of those things. But but I hooked up with him for the day, and he came with me down to the Fender place, which was wonderful to get to see all the gear. They have like several floors. They've got a floor for high performance, they call it. So that's all their EVH stuff, their Charvels, their Jacksons. That was really cool to see all of those things. Obviously, was slightly less my cup of tea, but amazing custom builds, their one-offs, things like that in this, you know, gorgeous, big, long sort of London in, you know, building. Sort of warehouse style building, just filled with all these gorgeous high performance guitars. Next floor up is Gretsch, and you've got some amazing stuff. They even had an old Stumpomatic, Patrick Stump from Fallout Boy. Don't like the band, but my goodness, that man has taste in guitars. So there was a lovely 3 Fidelitron pickup, solid body, double speed striped black and white. Patrick Stump, Stumpomatic, which was lovely to see. Gretsch floor full of interesting stuff, including the name of the model, the Gretsch that Dave Grohl played when he came on stage with Guns N' Roses. So that was pretty cool to see. I can't remember either.
Yeah, I don't know what it was. I had left by that point, to be fair.
I see. And then on the top floor is, of course, the Fender floor. And I got up there, I was like, brilliant, full of stuff. You know, I'd been out for a meeting with Fender beforehand, and then I was like, we got up to the top floor. Jay Cross and Dan Grace were like, that's cool, we'll come up and we'll show you some of the things. I'm like, brilliant, get up there, amazing room full of sofas, gear, amps, merchandise, all of this stuff all around me. And I was like, brilliant, I'm gonna do some videos, I'm gonna take some photos. And they were like, oh, actually, well, you can't take a photo on this wall because this is actually embargoed. This isn't coming out until later in the year. And they were like, oh no, this is also, but oh, this is too. And it turned out that half the room was unreleased stuff that I had to sign an NDA for, which I am very upset about, dear listener. I really want to talk to you about some of the amazing things that I saw there, but I have been very, very forcibly by Jay Cross absolutely banned from talking about anything at all that I saw there, essentially. But I will say the next few months from Fender are going to be extraordinary and incredibly exciting. They had some really, really, really awesome, interesting, Aerotons. Wonderful. Oh. Well, if I'm excited about it, it can't be that, or could it, dear listener? I don't think I'm allowed to say anything in either way. I think they actually get quite funny quite quickly about those sorts of things, old Fender. So, best. I mean, I actually probably shouldn't have put this even in the notes to talk about, because I essentially can't talk about anything. And Fender being the huge conglomerate that they are, it's not like me breaking an embargo with Ashdown by accident. I'm pain of death, can't upset, you know, Mr. X Disney. But I will say, dear listener, there were some absolutely fantastic things there. A wonderful little amp room where you can try out all of their bits and bobs, how to go on some wonderful custom shops. Just everything they're doing is still so fantastic, so on the nose. The build quality that's coming out of their custom shop at the moment is absolutely incredible. It made me want to buy an awful lot of things, but a wonderful. But I'm sort of realizing, dear listener, as I'm talking about this, how little I can talk about this. So,
moving on.
So, apologies, dear listener, for the slightly nothingy subject matter that I just discussed.
I mean, I think it's really exciting to know that you went to one that Fender has that place here, Yeah. And that you got a chance to go see a bunch of stuff, and that there's stuff to be excited about. Like, that's, yeah. I mean, I feel like you and I are usually excited about all things. And so, but it's just really nice to have, to just be like, oh, I can't wait. Like, the excitement of like, oh, something's coming soon, you know, like that's just, yeah. I mean, it's why we do this, isn't it? So it's great.
Exactly. For the new stuff. But we'll see. You know, watch this space, dear listener. It's about to get very good very quickly. Now, saving me from breaking embargoes, there was the question duck that's reminded me to remind you, dear listener, that after JD and I finish this episode, we're heading over to patreon.com/guitar nerds, where we're going to record a whole extra episode where we're going to talk about things, topics, questions, stuff like that that's been raised on the Guitar Nerds group on Facebook. This week, we're going to try and talk around some things like John Mahon has reached a time in his life where he stares longingly at 335 or 335 to you, JD, style guitars. And he's talking about options there that he's got. He knows that I like the some of the Japanese copies, things like that, Eastman. So maybe we'll talk about some options that he's got there. Hope Benedict is in a conundrum somewhere between Kemper and Line 6. So maybe we'll talk about the pros and cons. People have weighed in, commented on all the options. Other people like David Lucas have commented on there saying, you know, look, you've also got, don't forget, things like Tone X, which we spoke about very positively on the podcast. Big fans of that, and a great way to, you know, great way to save money, basically, because they're so affordable. And Sam Brooksby, who seems to always be someone that we're talking about because he is just so great, has always been a Telecaster person, but he's recently discovered Les Pauls, and he's feeling like he's sort of wasted his life and when he could have been playing Les Pauls. So I thought maybe we'd talk about guitars that JD and I have played that have really changed us and been like, oh damn, you go down a certain road, don't you? And sometimes you just don't question it, and then you know, you try something else. So maybe we'll talk about that. Before we do, I mentioned a couple of weeks ago that I accidentally, I think when we were podcasting, JD, last, yeah, that I accidentally made a purchase of a Squier Silver Series Precision Bass, yeah, on eBay. I did not expect to win it. It did not cost me a lot of money, but I foolishly placed a bid, not realizing that the listing finished in the middle of the night. So I won another P-Bass that I didn't need, but it was cool. They're Squier Silver Series. They're Japanese made, but they're not considered part of that, those first Japanese Squiers that now you see, any of the Tellys, the Strats, the Basses, the Jazz, or the P, they're all going for over a grand. They're very, very sought after. The Silver Series, for whatever reason, is less highly regarded. It's a later time period. A lot of them are mid-90s, before Squier was moved to Korea. And even those Korean ones are really good. But anyway, they don't go for a lot of money, the Silver Series. This one in particular was a rosewood neck, black body, black plate. The rosewood on the neck was absolutely fantastic. Now, I will caveat, I've never received, and this isn't the guy's fault at all. He was someone that had stopped, you know, he'd given up playing music, or he'd stopped playing music, and this had sat wherever, you know, in a cupboard for years. He decided to sell it. Yeah. It had never been cleaned. It was so, so filthy. It was so gross. I was like, I got it. And I was like, cool. He said it might need a bit of a setup. And I was like, got it out of the box. And I was like, yeah, the neck's bananaed, but that's fine. That's not something I can't fix. Check the electrics. I was like, brilliant. They work. So this is win-win. And I thought, well, I'll just, you know, bung some strings on it and set it up. And hey, you know, I've got a brilliant guitar. And I sort of looked at it and was like, no, I need to take this apart and deep clean this. So that's what I did. So that's what I've been doing this week. On the neck was obviously very filthy. So first things first, I I wet the neck slightly with, like, I've got this lovely Fender. It's like a quick clean, which is basically, it's not quite a polish. It's a more watery version of a polish, but handy to put on a fretboard if you just need to get it a little wet, and then take the edge of a credit card and get all the gunk off of the board. So just scrape away at the main board. It's important to use something plastic, not something metal that's going to scratch it. And also to go lengthways down the frets, not across, because you end up sort of, you know, putting scratches on the fretboard that way. So I do that, clean that off. Then I take some wire wool, some whatever the finest one is, triple O. I have no idea. Quadruple O. I don't know. Whatever the fine one is. Do that. So then you get the rest of the dirt off of the fretboard with that. And then a bunch of lemon oil. And then I have the Music Nomad Frine, which is their fret polish. Their fret polish kit, which has these lovely little guards that go over your fret. So they've got three different or four different sizes, depending on the size of your fret. You pop the guard over the top. They've got these microfiber cloths and this frine sort of paste that you put a little bit on the cloth, and then you can polish up each fret individually. It's dead easy. It takes no time. That polish doesn't really cost a lot, and it makes such a massive difference to your guitar. I recommend doing that, you know, even if you haven't, you know, bought an absolutely filthy instrument, dear listener, just to keep on top of your guitar. It's a good thing to do. But all of those things done, what I had was a gorgeously figured, wonderful rosewood neck. Obviously lemon oil on the neck to finish. I was thinking about putting some Monte Presso on there, but went lemon oil in the end.
I'm sure you will at some point.
Exactly.
Really, back to like the fret polishing, like it makes such a huge difference when frets are really finely polished. One, it's also like, make sure you don't have any burrs or like the strings don't get caught in anything. Cause that's besides like your bridge, that's the number one cause of string breakage, is like just a rough spot on a fret. The other thing is like, it just feels so lovely to play, like with really highly polished frets. Like it just, everything feels so silky. And it's, and like you said, like, especially with those fret guards, like one, I find it's a real meditative process to be able to just kind of like work fret by fret, you know, putting them on there. But the fret guards are really like fretboard guards, I guess, really they are, it's just really great. Cause it means you don't have to like, you know, you don't worry about taping everything up and all of that and removing. And it's just sort of,
well, it just makes it such an easy, quick process. Like it probably took me, I don't know, 20 minutes tops to do the whole board, maybe less, maybe like 15 minutes. It's so easy and makes your guitar sound immediately better. It's just,
I mean, it's one of the things we talked about with the Bronchoff too, but it's like, it's one of the things you can do to make an inexpensive instrument feel like a much more expensive instrument, is just like, take that detail, but you think about it, like, even if it takes you 20 minutes to do that, 20 minutes extra manufacturing time is a difference between, a 200-pound guitar and a 500-pound guitar.
That's a really good point. I never thought about that, but yeah. It's something that's easy to do and makes a big difference. So that was great. Did that. Had a little look at the body. Now, those Squire series, they come with those super thin one-ply scratch plates with no foil or anything on the underside either. So I was like, oh, it does look good, just that single ply. But it's really, they're not amazing. And especially on a P bass where you've got your input jack mounted into the scratch plate, it's so easy to bend those. And I was I'm gonna change it. So I changed out the plate, cleaned it all up, put the whole thing back together. Pickups fine, you know, volume and tone control fine. The pots were shallower because they were designed for the single ply plate. So I did really struggle to get them done up on a three ply, but I'll change the pots at a later date. So that's fine. That wasn't a problem. Got it all together. And I'm quite good at a rough eyeballed setup. I've set up so many guitars that I don't necessarily need, whilst I really love the Keep It Simple setup, the Music Nomad kit with all the measures. I'm quite good at just a rough eyeball. I don't need things to be perfect. So I do that. I roughly get the neck where I know it needs, I need it to be. I changed the bridge. I had like an old badass bridge. They're not badass anymore, are they? Omega. So I had one of those lying around. So I popped a new Omega bridge on it. Set the neck up, set the bridge, sat and played it. And I was like, huh, the action is still miles off the fretboard. I'll do this again. So I went back over it. And I was like, no, I kind of feel like I had this right. Action was still high. I was like, okay, obviously I'm not as talented as I think I am. I'm going to go, you know, I'm going to get the little files out, get the little measures out. Let's do the neck properly. So I, you know, whatever it is, the 0.008 at the sixth fret is what you want. Oh no. So yeah. Is it that one? I think it's that one. You do the feeler test,
yeah.
You know, with the first fret and the 12th fret. And then on the sixth fret, you're putting that 0.008 feeler test. And I was like, nope, that was right. That is exactly on the money. Maybe a little adjustment there, dear listener. Got it right. I was like, maybe the bridge is wildly out. Maybe I have totally missed on the bridge. Measured that up. I was like, nope, that's also completely right. Neck action still massively off the board. So I have no idea. I was completely stumped. I was like, I've never had this happen before. I guess I need a shim in the neck. Mm. It's a weird thing. I've never come across this. This makes me sound like such a layman. I've set up countless guitars and I was like, I've never had this problem before. Not this way round, you know, I don't know. I'm going to try a shim. I might even try taking off the Omega bridge. Maybe there's some inherent problem with that bridge. I can't work it out. But
I mean, unless you can try to lower the bridge saddles a bit.
Yeah, I lowered them to the point where I was losing some of my frets, and it was still high action.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, a shim potentially. You know, I mean, just to give a bit of angle to the neck, but
yeah, I think that's it. I think maybe there's a weird dip somewhere unusual in the neck.
Yeah, it's one of those things. It's like really interesting to be able to not be able to see it and to try to like, because it's, you know, if you're looking down the side of the neck, you know, and there's no curve or the sort of expected sort of you know, sort of relief you would imagine. Then and if everything's measuring correctly, you would you'd feel like it's got to be it's got to be right, unless it's just really high at like, you know, the 20th fret or 19th, whatever
P is. Something there's something wrong. I'm obviously doing something very silly here. I just haven't worked it out. What do you think, dear listener? Are you an expert setter upper? Are you listening to me talk right now and yelling at the screen? The screen? I don't know why you're listening on a screen. Yelling into the air and saying, why haven't you done this? Let me know. I do want to know. I want to find out what the solution is. That's my dilemma with the P bass. I saw, JD, you were uploading some pictures from your Bronco. You were talking recently about whether or not you're going to add another pickup to that Bronco. Is that still on the cards?
Yeah, I mean, it's still on the cards. I just have to figure out how and when and what I want to do. But I think I may end up just getting a totally new sort of scratch plate made and. Or make one and just kind of figure out like what I want to do with a different layout or something. But yeah, I don't know. I uploaded all those photos because it sort of came around as, you know, one of those like Instagram suggested reels. And I was like, actually, this looks pretty all right. Let me just, you know, tweak some things a bit. And I was like, I'll just do this because it was a good fun time. And I don't think I really posted that much of like all the gear shots going in, like the Dunlop pots before they were there, and like all the shielding.
Yeah, you did all the shielding and everything. Yeah. I forgot that you did that. That was
I mean, I always have copper tape around, so it's just my thing. Well, one, all of that started when I lived in an old farmhouse for a while, and literally everything buzzed. And so I was working on a jazz bass at the time, and I couldn't get it to not have that 60 cycle home, and then I just did everything I possibly could to do it, and then from that point on I just got really, really into shielding and everything, so that it became like a bit obsessive, you know, with me. So like all my bases, whatever I have, I usually, you know, take everything out and strip and just put shield, like all the shielding back and everything. And, you know, I've tried the, you know, the copper tape is great as long as you, you know, it's always overlapping and always touching and you don't leave any spaces. And I've also used the conductive paint from Stumac, like in the States. So just like actually doing, you know, the anti, like the shielding paint that you can do like around cavities and stuff like that, if you prefer that, and building up a few layers. So
it's not something I've ever done before. Is it, what's the more affordable option out of the two between tape and paint? Well, and what works better?
I mean, I think the copper tape is probably both of those. The paint I really like. It's just that you can't buy it or I've never been able to see it where you could buy it in a quantity that was for one or two guitars, you know? So you end up buying like a pot of paint, and you're like, well, I guess I'm doing all of mine. And you're like, okay, now I still have loads left over. And it's a bit like a bed liner for like a pickup truck or something like that, like the spray on bed liner kind of stuff, right, that yeah. You can do. So you really need to build up layers, and it takes a lot of time and everything. And it just, at the end of the day, it just looks like black paint. Whereas I quite like the copper tape, or, you know, just full copper shielding idea. One, you know, because if once you get the technique down around like bending corners and stuff, it's pretty all right. But then also it just looks cool, you know. It's like you take everything out and it's like oh, this is copper, and it's like I built a Faraday cage inside my guitar, you know. It's just a good look. And it's also the first bass I ever had with that was the custom I had built in like late 90s, early 2000s.
Oh, yeah. The five string.
Yeah, that five string, where it's like, and everything there is like, it's all copper taped, you know, within an inch of its life. And I was like, oh, this is really cool. And so like, there's also that, like, that's really where I first learned about it in a sense. And so it's also this like, oh, it's a premium thing to do, you know, so. But it also is great. I mean, I've also had basses where they sound fine without it, but it's just, at the first sign of any unwanted noise, I just take everything apart. Or if I'm replacing pots or doing stuff like in the control cavity anyway, it's like, well, I'm here, I might as well do this. And I usually, you know, I still have a couple. I think I used it up on the Bronco, but I still had rolls from that I bought from Stuart McDonald when I was in the US still. So right. You know, it's like stuff that lasts forever, you know. So
yeah, that's cool. That sounds like a handy thing to have. It's not something I've ever done on anything, but yeah, maybe worth it. Because I have really enjoyed with this Squire being like, I'm just going to make this good. And I know that I currently haven't, but I'm really enjoying, I've got no rush for this instrument. Mm. It's still on the bench. Maybe this is something I'll invest in as well, because it would be nice to make it as good as it can be. It's nice. It's fun to do that. Even though it's a relatively inexpensive guitar, it's nice to put a little bit of effort in.
I mean, I agree. I think that's one of it, when you have a guitar like this, the unexpected purchase, right? Where you're like, oh, maybe I'll just give this a go. Like it really is just kind of like having, it just gives you a place to like have fun and like, and do mods and try stuff and be like, oh, I've never actually done this before. Let me just give it a go, you know, or like if you wanted to be like, I've always wanted a fretless, maybe I'll try ripping the frets out, but I don't want to, you know, like the first one I did that on was one of my old Warwicks, you know, right. Like, and I was like, maybe I shouldn't have started with like a 2,000-pound instrument, you know, but, but like, it's like, cause there is a technique to it that I finally got probably around the 24th fret, but, you know, it just things like that. But it's, yeah, I mean, that's again, kind of, talking back to about the Bronco, it's like, it's one of the great things about it where it's like, no, maybe I want to swap the pickups around. I have no, there's no worry that like, I'm going to devalue it. And it's like, the value is in me being able to do this stuff, which I like doing, and being able to like, oh, I've always wanted to have this kind of pickup. Maybe I'll try it. Maybe I'll, you know, it's just, it's just fun to be able to do different stuff all the time. So
yeah, exactly. And you might even land on something that you can't live without on any guitar afterwards as well. The ultimate pickup configuration.
Yeah. I mean, you know, look at all the old stories we hear from like our heroes that have done stuff like put an Ovation pickup, you know, in their bass or did something, you know, like did their own like swimming pool route, you know, and just like chucked, you know, who was the first person to chucked a humbucker into a Strat, you know?
I think the end of the 70s, start of the 80s is so responsible for that. It was like the modding era. Mm. You know, you look at like Billy Sheehan's guitar, you know, look at Eddie Van Halen. Yeah, these were legendary instruments that were just them putting whatever in. You know, even you look at the Black Strat.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think also I feel like that time is the first time that there started to be some sort of standardization. Right. And then so it was like everyone, you almost had a platform to build on as opposed to everything being completely wild and bespoke, and you know, like you couldn't swap bridges because they just clearly didn't work. He's like trying to put like a Gibson style floating bridge on a Strat, and you're like, well, this doesn't work. This is built for an entirely different kind of guitar.
You know? Yeah, so. Yeah, exactly. Well, I wanted to mention actually this week, dear listener, that we are teaming up with Chapman Guitars. So we're going to be giving away an ML1X, one of their lovely Super Strat style guitars. Still working out exactly how I'm going to do that. I'll be talking about that with them over the next couple of weeks. I'm going to sort that out. Obviously, dear listener, we are only a couple of weeks away from starting the build of the vintage Pro Shop guitar as well. That's going to be a lot of fun. So we'll see where we get to with that. But I've got the Chapman ML1X here. I'm going to record some sound samples and things like that with it over the next little while. I've also got the Jodo Gas Jockey, which I'm going to talk about in detail next week, because that is a very cool Firebird meets Stratocaster triple mini humbucker guitar. But the ML1X, JD, we were talking about this before. I was like, yeah, dear listener, you know I'm obviously a traditionalist, so Chapman guitars have never been quite my wheelhouse. Lots of you, dear listener, love a modern style instrument. And I appreciate this isn't exactly modern. It's more functional. And I'm always, you know, form over function. But the ML1X is a cracking little, like, simple Strat style HSS. It's a mahogany body. It's got like a lovely maple cap on it. You've got a lovely Strat trim. The pickups are fantastic. The HSS, you can get some lovely their own Chapman Alnico 5 pickups. You get some great straight. I'm using the in-between settings quite a lot on this, but you've got a big full bore humbucker there as well. They haven't gone for a super skinny modern neck. There's some chunk to it, Tele-esque almost in the neck. So it's just a good. We were saying, JD, I was like, I think if I just needed one guitar next to my desk to do a bit of everything on, that's exactly what this is, and well built, and they're like $599, which is not a bunch.
Yeah, I mean they're a really great price, and it's one of those guitars, because I've seen it. You know that if you just look at it, you're like, that's definitely like well more than $599. You know, it looks like a really great guitar, and then the thing is, like you're saying, like the chunky neck is great, because that's usually one of the things I struggle with. With Strats, and also, I mean, I love the option of a humbucker as well. You know, like a bridge humbucker and single coils just gives you so much flexibility. It's classic, you know. So it's really, really cool. I dig it.
Yeah, it is very cool. Now, I'm going to play... I actually recorded a little demo with it earlier, but you're not really going to get a feel for the guitar exactly, dear listener, because what I'm demoing is the... I mean, it's JD's on the podcast, so of course I'm going to talk about KMA machines. We're going to talk about the Cirrus, because we have... The KMA have got, coming out, something very special, a super limited edition version of the Cirrus. It's just a colorway limited edition version, but so all the innards are exactly the same, but they're hardly making any. It's very, very cool colorway, and I realized we'd never actually done a proper in-depth demo of the Cirrus on the podcast. And dear listener, if you're looking for like a delay and a reverb that kind of does the whole ambient thing, the Cirrus is a great option. I think of it as being a bit like all the sort of Strymon-y style things that you get out there, the Boss 200 and 500 series, all those sorts of things. But they've done the whole thing with just rotary controls, no screens, nothing like that. You get three different delay voicings, three different reverb voicings. You can blend between them, but you can do really interesting things with the delay as well, like the time controls react like analog delay controls. You don't get that weird sort of scratchy, you know, sort of breakdown sound you do on some digital delays. They work really well. The time setting is so incredibly broad that actually wind it completely down, you get some great chorus settings. And if you max out the delay levels so that you're not getting any clean signal at all, you get some lovely like lo-fi vibrato tones as well. It's just it's a very versatile pedal. The octave setting gives you great shimmer and stuff like that. It's super cool. What do you use your Cirrus mostly for?
Well, I mean, like what you're saying is like I really like the sort of chorusy sounds I can get out of it, because I'm using it. Well, two things, which is also great that it's the same pedal that does both these things. One, I use it for just a bit of chorus to make things bigger, create a bit of movement with the sound. When I'm playing, you know, like chords up high or something like that, it's just really nice to have some other movement with everything else that's going on. And then I also really like it to just do giant walls of sound and weirdness. So like the shimmer's great. The like all the different options you have for the like the tails you'll get for the delay and the reverb and everything. It's just, it's really multifunctional, but I like the sort of both ends of the spectrum. Like one, like using it is like fairly subtly, I would say. And then the other side is like big washed out, you know, shimmer, huge, huge sound.
Yeah.
Honestly, I'm using it because presently I'm using a smaller pedal board than I normally would go with, and I don't have chorus on my board. I don't have another reverb on my board, so I'm sort of using it in places where when I would just use a chorus or reverb, I use the Cirrus now in that mode. And then when I want like what I would probably use this like in a bigger board, what I would use it for is the big giant shimmer sounds and stuff. Like I use it for that as well. It's just a couple tweaks between, you know, like I like not having the presets, and also I like being able to twiddle the knobs in a usable, noisy fashion.
Yeah.
You know, like
yeah.
You're saying, like where it's like, you know, no one writes, well, bands that I'm usually playing with now, no one has guitar solos, but we all have like pedal solos and stuff, and it's like it's really good for a pedal solo. So
that's exactly it. Cirrus, really good for a pedal solo. Well, let's play a little something to the listener. It's just gonna be solo guitar, dear listener. I'll play like some simple sounds, and then I'm gonna bring in a chorusy sound, bring in the vibrato element, and then we'll switch to the octave, and you'll get some idea of the broad range of sounds that the Cirrus can create with ease.
Thank you. There you have it. Okay, so that's the that is the KMA Cirrus, played with a nice little in between setting on the Chapman ML1X. But as you can hear, it's just such a great pedal for doing kind of a bit of everything, sort of simple tones to complete the ambient tones. I didn't really bring in the reverb an awful lot, only towards the end, quite subtly. But like JD says, it's capable of some absolutely massive, huge, whopping wall of sound delays, perfect for like volume swells and stuff like that.
Yeah, and the other thing I just wanted to say about this is it was something we were talking about sort of just in casual conversation, but is around the, like, the Cirrus is like, I find myself every once in a while just like wanting, like, well, I do this, but like sitting down with it again and just sort of having a play. And it's like a really good, it's just, I really like to learn all the controls of every pedal I have, yeah. You know, in this sense. And it's like, there's so many controls and so many different combinations of stuff that I feel like I kind of learn a bit more each time. And sort of all pedals like this that are the big giant walls of sound and stuff creators, you know, like I feel like they all benefit from actually spending time with the pedals and figuring out exactly how things work, as opposed to sort of just kind of clicking it on and putting everything at 12 o'clock or something,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, you talk about the Cirrus. There are 9 rotary controls on the yeah. on the Cirrus, and then 4 switches. You know, that's excluding the fact that it also I used it a bit on there, but like holding the tap control makes the delay tails go into oscillation. Holding the engage, the normal on off foot switch, makes the reverb decay go to sort of infinite. You know, there's a whole expression mode. You can assign an expression pedal to several different functions based on a rotary control as well. There's no screen there for you to flick through.
That's honestly, that's one of my favorite parts of the pedal. Is it's like just having, because then like there are like when I'm using it in like chorus mode, I want the expression pedal to be something different than when I'm using it in a different mode. And then I don't remember how, it's basically like, can you click through all 9 controls or something like that? I think
I don't know.
It's pretty substantial.
3, 4, 5, 6. There are 6 different options on the
record. Yeah. So like basically like mid song, you can just, you know, one control changes like this. The expression control is a completely different parameter, and it's just such a versatile thing to have in a compact pedal without having like multiple expression ends. Because I used to have those with all the Moger Fugger stuff that I used to use pretty extensively. Like they had individual inputs for each thing. So if I wanted one expression pedal to control time, it goes into this spot. If I wanted to go to delay, that's great. Which was also cool because at one point I had the ring mod and I had four expression pedals.
I never knew that was the case. That explains why everyone I know who's got one of the Moger Fuggers has a load of expression pedals on a pedal board. That's why.
Oh, yeah. It's also just because like, oh, it's just cool to use it. But I remember at one point I had one Moger Fugger, 4 expression pedals for it, and then a couple of other little things. And I had the Moog expression pedals, which I quite like anyway. And it's just like, I was like, this is almost an entire Moog board, and it's just one pedal, really. So,
yeah. Well, they are very cool. But yeah, talking about like learning how to use a pedal being a really important thing. We spoke about this before we started the podcast, but actually, dear listener, because I do a lot of these little videos for KMA, just because those sort of ambient soundscape pedals tend to be something I use a little bit less. You know, I really love a compressor or a transparent drive or, you know, something like that that's more my wheelhouse. I'd only ever plugged it in to make quick 30-second things. And that basically means find a sound, here's that sound, play a little thing on it. And this was the first time that I sat down and went through it control by control. I was like, oh, huh. I mean, the fact that I started off with those like chorus and then the vibrato sounds, I was like, I did not know I could do this. But it's very good. That is a really usable sound. Because that's just messing around with the sensitivity control when you're on the modulation voicing. And if you max it out, obviously it applies that modulation to everything because it's dynamics based. I'd always just had it in the middle so that as you dug in, you got more modulation, but actually maxing it out. So you turn your delay pedal into a permanently lo-fi tape machine vibrato delay is really cool and really useful. And it, yeah, just goes to show, dear listener, learn what your pedals do. I think that's the
All of this to say too, the other thing we talked about that I still am sort of giggling about, so I'm going to tell everyone else now, is that the idea of having a pedal like the Cirrus has so many options on it and everything, which is wonderful and is genuinely what I want. There also exists a world where I want a pedal that is set up to do those big post-rock walls of sound that you get from like Mogwai, Explosions in the Sky, that kind of stuff, that is just an on-off pedal. Like everything is inside it. There's no controls. You can't do anything. Maybe level, but it's just like a single button, like boom, there it is. And it's like, and it just magically makes that sound. That would be great.
I'm so up for that because fuzzes do it. You get loads of fuzz companies do that. I've got Farm Pedals Leaf fuzz that's got no controls in it. I had a Prickle fuzz that had no controls on it. There's it's just do it with a delay reverb. Oh, the Lazy Compressor from Anna Sounds, actually, I think that does have one setting, but I think it's just a blend. So lose the blend and that would be there. You know, I was thinking of doing a range of Guitar Nerds pedals where I just make mini pedals with just a foot switch and the Guitar Nerds logo on them. And I'll put different circuits in random ones. So you might get an unlatched kill switch or you might get a phaser, always slow, with just an on-off, you might get a fuzz. I'm up for that, and just not. Man. I won't even know what they are. I'll put the circuits in, jumble them up, and then I'll people can purchase them from the Guitar Nerd shop for like £20, but you don't know what you're gonna get.
Yeah, I love the idea that we could do. That we basically take the model that everyone's doing now and doing really simple pedals for cheap, but we do it. And it's like, we take away the controls. I don't worry about this too, but it's like, it's just like, this is our phaser setting and it's the only phaser setting you're allowed to have.
That's it.
This is our transparent drive setting. It's the only transparent, it's the only setting. There's no dip switches. There's no internal rotary, nothing. It's just like, this is what it sounds like. Take it or leave it.
That is, I'm going to make sure this, I'll even put glue all over the circuit board. So there's no way anyone could alter it.
Yeah.
This is definitely a solution. I'm gonna do that. I have like something like 40 or 50 unlatched Guitar Nerds kill switches turning up in the next week. I wonder if I can just put something in each of them. I need to buy some circuits and see what I can do. This is going to happen, dear listener. I think I've got excited about enough about it now to actually make it happen. Anyway, we are coming up to the end of this week's podcast. So JD and me are going to head over to the Patreon episode where we're going to talk about a few things. We didn't get round this week to talking about a couple of the new releases. Obviously, very excitingly, there's a new 1981 pedal and the topic of warm audio, premium versions of other people's pedals, a bit like what Behringer do, only premiumer. So let's maybe we'll talk about that a little bit, but you can join us over there. If you want to get in touch with us for any reason, dear listener, you can email us at info@guitarnerds.net, DM us on Instagram, ask us in the Facebook group, the Guitar Nerds group. If you're a Patreon supporter, contact us through there. Our next episode will be over on patreon.com/guitarnerds. For all the info on how to sign up and support our charming community, just head over there. You can support us for as little as $1 a month. Thank you very much for listening. You've been lovely. We've been the Guitar Nerds. Farewell.
Goodbye.
Well, that's it for another week of the Guitar Nerds podcast, which only leaves me to say thank you eternally and very, very muchly to all of our top-tier Patreon backers. Thank you very much to Marcus Deluxe, Suresh, Dorsonic Pickups, Chris Franklin, Anton Fryant, Russ Meehan, Barry Gresbick, Steve Davis, Daniel Walker, Jorin Brown, John Conway, The Studio Rats, Russell Healing, Yogi the Guitarist, Ty Allen, Kyle Harris, Sean Hughes, Andy Hoffler, Eric Hemmer, Jeffrey Wax, Brian Einsler, Mark Hisiao, Kaduaki, Stuart Robson, Eric File, Peter Pesce, Andy Manley, Joe Puttick, Blake Weiland, Phil Radomski, Dave Lee, Ross Edwards, Jason Wharton, James Dorr, Jake Gray, Derek Rich, Scott Kennedy, Steve Merkel, Abe Matthews, Christopher Losef, Stephen Burke, Robin Smith, Kytopia the Band, JD Short, Andy McKenzie, Brad Page, Paul Corrigan, Rob Nordvik, Scott O'Brien, and the wonderful Moog Gravit.
Your favorite one-hit wonder.
Or that overpriced toy your parents would never let you have.
Or that TV show that no one else remembers because it was canceled way too soon. Now what if we could fix it? I'm Francesca Ramsey.
And I'm DeLon Grant. And after 20 years of friendship, we are now hosting a new nostalgia podcast called Let Me Fix It.
Each episode, we'll dig into our favorite celebrities, shows, and brands of yesteryear, and then imagine what it would take to repackage them for relevance today.
Think of our show as an intervention, but with way less stakes.
So subscribe to Let Me Fix It wherever you get your favorite podcasts.